Number 7A.
We go on in our investigation of the Christ order as we have it in the scientific translation of Immortal Mind. And on our chart, we take now the last column on the right-hand side. Namely, we also can investigate what signs we will encounter when we resist the Christ translation. Well, this is a very important column because it will show us what symptoms are produced in us or in the world when the Christ translation is resisted. Now we know that the Christ order shows that that Christ idea goes on anyway. So it is not dependent on people resisting it or accepting it. The Christ idea is independent of people and of nations and times and place and things. It is an idea that is empowered by God, as we have seen, comes from the potency of the divine principle, and therefore will always be at work. Now the point is, as we have seen, that if we go along with it, therefore along the divinely subjective, objective way, we go along with the divine order, we stay in that divinity, we therefore go along the way of science, we choose that way of science, whereas then when we are not going consciously along that order and begin to resist it at one or the other point, then we have in that last column really the symptoms that are brought forth by the Christ idea. They are naturally all negative symptoms, so to say, for the human, and that is therefore important to see that when these negative symptoms appear, that we do not mistake them as signs of animal magnetism, but that they are actually the working of the Christ idea. So that evil beliefs appearing, crisis, chemicalizations, and so on appearing, are actually the outcome of a divine idea and not the outcome of animal magnetism. Animal magnetism is what? In this case, resisting the Christ order. That's the aspect of animal magnetism in it. Not so much the symptoms that appear. They are only the outward manifestation of the resistance because, that we have always to remember, because the Christ idea goes on. Not because the Christ is not working, but just the very other way around, because the Christ idea is working, we have these difficulties. So again, we could go through that last column and fill in the boxes there, and again, we would see what we would experience if we resist it. So let's take principle and see how we experience the divine principle when we try to resist it. What would be the signs here that we would encounter? Chaos? Well, no, chaos has nothing to do with principle. Huh? Chaos has to do with spirit, huh? It's disorder. So principle, we must see what principle itself first bring forth. Well, yes.
A sense of anarchy.
Okay. Anarchy. Sorry. No, I bet you have pronounced it wrong, rightly. Yes. Anarchy, yes. I just wonder sometimes how you can understand my English. I have sometimes difficulty to understand your English. Yes. Yes, so you will go out from the point of government, of principle. I guess that was the reasoning, and that you feel, well, if we do not go along that government of principle, it may show itself forth as anarchy. Yes, that may be a sign, an outcome of it. Huh? Yeah. But, Frank, sorry. Personal sense. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. You see, we have to still consider something which I may not have repeated again, namely that the Christ order is, we have said, has two facets, always a power sense and a translating sense. So we somehow must find terms that have a power sense in it. But if we resist the divine principle, we can say, well, what happens then when we resist the divine principle? I think the very first point is that we realize that we cannot evade principle, that we cannot evade sidestep principle, because we suddenly find that that principle is imperative, is apodictical. You know, can you hear the power sense in it? That it has such an authority, as we had it before, such an authority that it appears to us when we resist it as something that has such an authority which is imperative, which is apodictical, which says you can't evade it, you can't sidestep it, you can't get around it. Something which says you can run away, but it, you can't run away after all. It will run after you. You just can't evade it. And so you get much more that sense, then the outcome of it is naturally a crisis or so, an anarchy, but that would be then be the objectification of it. Here in the subjective sense, we feel, oh golly, every time I try to run away from principle and I try to work out something without principle, it doesn't work. It's so imperative that principle comes along and says, you can't get around it. You know, it's like Jonah who felt, well, I don't want to obey the command of God. I get around it. I get out of God's realm. I go on the boat, and then I'm far away from the impact of the divine principle. And we could see running away didn't do him anything good. That the principle is so imperative and just doesn't let loose, you see. Doesn't let loose until it brings us under its subjection. So I think you get much more that sense here right away if we resist it, that we say, I can't resist it endlessly. There comes a time where principle is so imperative that it says, now stop it. Now you have to really return to the Lord, as the prophet would say it. Return to the Lord was the great cry of the prophets. Yes. So I think you could write there perhaps imperative, apodictical, cannot be evaded, cannot be sidestepped. These are the signs and symbols that we encounter. Then we can go to the next one, to life. Again, we must see that here we get the tone of the power sense, and that that power wants to express itself. When we accept it easily, then it's the dynamic sense, as we had it in the first column. It's then becoming, in the second column of if we let it happen, a generating power. But what does it become when we resist this life power, this vital power? How do we feel the Christ then, the Christ power then, if we try to stop it? Can we stop it? Can we repress it? Huh? Yeah? Yeah, so it becomes irrepressible. Huh? Can you hear the life sense in it, the power sense in it? Huh? So that one begins to feel that life power becomes irrepressible, irresistible. Nothing can resist it. Nothing can suppress it. Business. Now, business has no power sense, no translating sense. Business is. Business is being. So it has not a sense of wanting to express it. See, can you see? This is always the most difficult thing, though it's very simple actually. Always to see when we have an order, any order, the Christ order, Christianity order, science order, the very first thing we have to define to ourselves is the main trend of that order, the main aim of that order. Here, the Christ order, we have said the main point is that it wants to express itself or translate itself. And we have to stick to that through the whole chart, through the whole contemplation of the Christ order. We have to stick to that. We have to stick to that waterfall. We have to stick to that. Or else we leave the Christ order and we just talk about synonymous terms. Now that is not what we want to do. We don't want to talk about life here as isness, about the synonymous term life. We want to talk about the Christ at the point of life. So this is the melody and the music that we must have when we contemplate these orders. You know, you must constantly have in your, so like a background music, perhaps you can say, always the same music, the waterfall music, like the Roman fountain that goes down over seven cascades, goes right down. It's therefore listen as if it would be music, the angels sing, music that all these terms must have a translating sense from above to beneath, and the power sense that brings about this translation. So every synonymous term will have to bring this out, especially as we are in the subjective sense. So if we begin to resist the Christ idea, the very first thing we hear here at principle that says, oh, you can't get away with it. I am the power. I come. I am the imperative, apodictical power. You can't get away. You can never get away. You better don't try to get away. You better don't try to be a Jonah. You better obey the word of the Lord. You better do what the divine principle tells you to do. You can try to run away, but you can never run away from God's presence. So you hear the music that says principle is imperative. Then it says, as life, again that power sense, and because I'm imperative, I'm irrepressible, I'm irresistible, you can't suppress me. I have within myself such a terrific power sense that every resistance you put up against me, I will break down. Yeah? Can you hear the melody? Not so much my words. And isn't that what we experience? That we can try as long as we want to go against the Christ is still more powerful. It comes as principle and then as life, as something which is irresistible. We never can fight the Christ idea. We can never be victorious over the Christ idea. No matter what we try, it will just put us into another situation where the life power says, here I am again, I'm irrepressible. Just think of sometimes of a root of a tree in the ground. You put asphalt on it, you say asphalt, you will put concrete on it, and after a year or two that concrete breaks because beneath is that life sense of the root that begins to grow and the concrete breaks. It's irrepressible. You can't hold it back. And that's something that we naturally have to keep in consciousness, so that we can say to us, sooner or later, we will have to bend our knees, sooner or later. All right. We go to the next one, to truth. In truth, again, we would have to take those ideas which we know in the synonymous term truth, which bring out the Christ power at the point where it says, what happens when the truth is resisted? And so, what do we feel we get here? Yes? Yeah? It keeps on dominating. Like a crushing power. Yes, yes. So it goes, say, a step further than the dominating power. If we let it happen, it has dominion over us. But if we resist that dominion of truth, then we can be quite sure that truth crushes us, that truth really, like that, grinds to powder. See, it's like that rock that is in Daniel that is taken out and falls on the feet, and it's crushed to powder. It just shows against truth we cannot battle. There is no victory against truth. It comes, see, it's one step further than life. Life just first says, I'm irresistible. Now, what does truth do? It says, to everything that resists, you have to go. You will be destroyed. You will be crushed. So that we have here a sense of the destructive power of truth, destructive against every resistance. Yes? Resistance? Proof. Oh, yeah. Resistance proof. Yes. Yes? Is that clear too? Now, when we come to love and ask ourselves what kind of a power does love express when love is resisted? So actually we could go through the ideas that we have in love and just filter out those ideas or that idea which really brings out this Christ idea, the Christ idea of love, when love is resisted. And there we always have a very nice idea in our list of ideas that love does what? Saves? No. Because we had already saving in the column before, you see? You have to, you see how you can go horizontally too, and say, what have, love wants to save us. Love is the salvation, if we let it happen. If we don't let it happen, what happens then? Yeah, then it isn't forcing it, It's not just then the easy flow of salvation, then it says, all right, I love you enough to enforce on you to accept what best promotes your growth, to enforce on you what is right. I don't leave you in peace. I think that's one point we have to see very clearly. A bit louder, please. Yes, 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 it is. It is actually a loving sense, because it says, I don't let you go. You know, as the angel that said at Peniel, that says, I don't let you go except you bless me. So that's a love blessing. Now love blesses, but here as a Christ enforces that blessing. Says, I don't rest until I have blessed you. Yes? So we have here this enforcing power perhaps that we could put in, and we just remember what it means. And then we would come to that borderline again from love to soul, where now this irrepressible power manifests itself, objectifies itself. And naturally it objectifies itself for the human in a negative way, because it's resistant. So when we come to soul, what do we experience when this power is resisted? Something which we know all only too well. Huh? We suffer. Huh? We have a suffering sense. Huh? So can you see how important it is to see the place value, for instance, of suffering? If we take the term suffering or the concept suffering out of any context, just as an isolated concept, we say to that concept, we don't like it. It's something wrong. And we should fight it. We should fight it as suffering. But if we put it into the relationship here of the whole Christ translation, then suffering is not an isolated idea, but is somehow an outcome of something, namely the outcome here of resisting the Christ idea. You see? Therefore, we will handle the question of suffering differently when we see it in its place value in the whole Christ chart here. Because then we say, I don't have to treat me against suffering. I don't have to replace suffering with non-suffering. What we have to do is to see suffering is here something that happens because of something very different. Because we resist, that's the last column. Because we have within our sense a resistance against what? Against the Christ idea. Therefore, I would treat suffering not just through soul, that you would do when you deal with it metaphysically, but when you deal with it from a science standpoint, you would see it as something that is the outcome of our resistance to the Christ idea, and therefore the healing would be in accepting the Christ idea. And therefore I would go through that first column and see that's the only Christ idea that goes on, and that Christ idea brings only forth that which is good, only manifests only ideas and never anything else. So if I stay with the first column and therefore I experience the second column, and then the third column is no more there. There's no more happen. Yes? Is that clear? Huh? We have to see more and more, you see, that when we deal with ideas that we cannot just go back to our synonymous terms alone, as we have done in the first three syllabus classes. There we have perhaps taken soul, and they've said, what is the counterfeit of soul? Well, the counterfeit of soul is suffering. So if we have suffering, we can offset that suffering through soul. Well, that's all right, but it doesn't go very far. It doesn't go very far. It's still a metaphysical treatment, whereas if we go to science, which takes in the world and the Christ and Christianity and science, then we begin to deal with it in a very different way. We say, instead of fighting suffering, I begin to correct my resistance towards the Christ idea, and I can correct my resistance to the Christ idea by accepting the Christ idea, and therefore consciously flow with the Christ order. If I flow with the Christ order, we have in that first column no signs of suffering. Not at all. And that would heal the case. Did I make that very clear? Would you like to ask something on that point? It's a very important point. You see, the further we go with the syllabus classes, the more we see that we have to tackle all the problems of our daily life from different standpoints. We always rise higher and higher, and so also already here we will use, so to say, the Christ order, and not just the synonymous term. Which three you mean? Yes? No. I think we have to be even a bit more meticulous in seeing we come to chemicalization when we come to spirit here in the box. Why? Because the first four, principle, life, truth, and love, are only giving us the subjective sense of it. And only when we cross that dotted line, we get the objective sense of it. All right.